This episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast is supported by Wonder Capital. Wonder Capital is the leading online investment platform that allows individuals to invest in large-scale solar projects across the USA. Wonder Solar Investment Fund allows you to earn up to 11% on fixed notes annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating global climate change. Want to learn more? Gain access to Wonder Solar Investment Funds at wondercapital.com/moneytree. That's Wonder Capital, Wonder with a U.
Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. I'm Joe Salcihi from Stacking Benjamins. And as you know, when I'm in the driver's seat, we're going to have some fun today. Well, you might have seen a few weeks ago, Vice President Biden released a statement on his cancer moonshot and the big hope to cure cancer, which a lot of people are fired up about. Of course, I have relatives that that passed away because of cancer. My son went on a bike ride from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska to help raise awareness of cancer research and raise money for cancer research. So this national initiative turns a lot of its attention to cancer research, and rightfully so. Most investors are probably unaware that they can contribute to the cause and give your portfolio a boost at the same time. And we're going to talk to one guy who's right in the middle of that. Brad Loncar, CEO of Loncar Investments, is going to talk to us about the only exchange-traded fund to invest in cancer immunotherapy. Welcome to the party, man.
Thanks a lot for having me, Joe. I have to say, your son's bike ride from Texas to Alaska, that must have been amazing.
I know. Isn't that wild? I love seeing the pictures. I don't think I would have wanted to pedal along with him.
Me neither, but hats off to him. It sounds like it was for a great cause.
Oh, it was fantastic, Brad, and it was emotional. Well, you're right on top of this, and I want to ask you, there's a difference between a cure for cancer, which we all, of course, want, Brad, and a great investment. What's the case for investing in this area?
Sure. So I'm a biotech investor, and one of the things that I've noticed over the years in biotech investing is that people think that biotech is one thing, and it's not. For example, you think of technology. Years ago, you thought of technology as one thing, and I think now you think of technology as its individual components, like cybersecurity and semiconductors and telecom equipment. Those are all very different businesses, some of which are high growth and high innovation, and some of which are low growth. And the reality of biotech is the same. And I think that we're in a very special time right now. I think in biotech that this cancer immunotherapy is the most interesting science and the most disruptive thing that's going on. And so I think that it's going to change cancer over the coming years. And for that reason, I think it's the highest growth piece of biotech. And so, you know, a lot of people think of biotech as just one monolithic thing. And I'm trying to carve out what I think is the most innovative and high growth area of it. And to me, that's cancer immunotherapy.
Well, let's talk about that. For people that have been lucky enough not to be touched by this in their personal life, what is cancer immunotherapy and how does it work?
Sure. So I think pretty much everyone out there is familiar with chemotherapy, sure, which in many cases is very toxic and affects the entire body. Well, the immune system is different. It's natural and it can adapt and learn. And so the theory is, if you can harness it to treat a disease like this, you might see more effective and longer lasting results. And so there's a handful of drugs that are already on the market. Bristol Myers has a big one called Opdivo, and Merck has a big one called Keytruda. And those drugs have already revolutionized the treatment of melanoma, for example. They've been approved for melanoma, types of lung cancer, and most recently kidney cancer. And there's also a groundswell of companies that are working on second and third generation things that I hope that we'll see come to the market over the coming years. And so the theory is to use the body's natural defenses to treat the disease and maybe do it in a way that's less burdensome and less toxic.
When it comes to the investor side of this, obviously there's a lot of research on the front end, a lot of these companies involved in research that takes a lot of money. And of course, when we see, governmental approval, we see things start to work, the stock goes up, but when things don't work, the stock goes down. What do you see as an investor, the risk reward ratio here is? Is it a, do you see your index go all over the place? I guess to put it in the geeky way, the way you and I talk as investors, Brad, is the standard deviation really high on this thing?
Sure. So biotech is always going to be volatile. There's no way of getting around that. But for example, if you invest in it in a diversified way, historically, it's been very profitable. For example, ever since the financial crisis, and especially over the last 4 or 5 years, biotechnology in general has been the stock market's best sector every single year, hands down. Like if you look at the S&P sector classifications, over the last 4 or 5 years, it is number one every single year. And the key is you have to be diversified. It is so difficult, even for an expert, you know, somebody like me who's been around this for tons of years and goes to medical meetings and, you know, talks to doctors all day. It is very difficult to pick individual biotech stocks because any one company, you know, these trials can be very risky. But on the flip side of that, if you invest in it in a diversified way, history has been has treated you very well. And so the key is for any approach that you take to biotech, you have to do it in a diversified way. So that's why I wanted to create an index that has a basket of these companies that are all working on this immunotherapy, because I think it's a long-term trend that's going to have a major impact on cancer. And it's hard to pick the, you know, time will tell if I'm right or not about that. Certainly I think that I am. But the key is, even within the context of that, it's hard to pick winners.
Right.
You're trying to bet on the theme itself. And so that's what I wanted to track.
And these type of companies, I would imagine, then are normally pretty premium priced, right? The P ratio is going to be fairly high.
Well, yes and no. So the way that I've created my index, I have two categories. So first of all, it's 30 companies, and that's broken up into two categories. Seven of those 30 are the companies that are bringing these drugs to the market today. And those are names that you're familiar with, like Bristol Myers and Merck and Amgen and large companies like that. And those are pretty normally priced for healthcare stocks and just the stock market in general, especially as things have, you know, been a little weak in 2016. They have, you know, somewhat normal PE ratios. Now, the other category, I have 23 of what you more classically think of as biotech companies. For the most part, these are companies that don't have any products on the market yet. They're developing second and third generation things that you'll see come over the coming years. And so those are all highly speculative. There's no E in the PE ratio because they're just developing drugs now. So I think, I like having the big companies in there for many reasons. But one that I'm hoping plays out is, you know, this is a long-term trend, and as I mentioned, biotech is volatile even in the good times. Well, I think having a core group of those large companies might provide a little element of stability over the short term while some of the trials and things in those smaller companies are playing out. And I think over the long term, those smaller companies will provide most of the growth.
What does backtesting show you about your index and about the ETF during different times? Do you see any correlation with the broad market in general? Does this tend to go up at the same time the S&P goes up, but goes up more, and then goes down when the S&P goes down, but more? Or is there a different level of correlation?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to punt on that question because the SEC and FINRA really frown on talking about backtesting.
Okay.
And so I'm a little hesitant to do that publicly. But one thing I could say just in general about this is immunotherapy is a new thing. Many of those biotech companies that I mentioned to you are somewhat new companies. Many of them went public in 2014 and maybe a little earlier. And so even if I was a little more free to talk about backtesting, in this case, I don't think it would particularly be relevant because this is a new thing. And if I backtested it 10 years, it wouldn't really tell you anything meaningful.
How much does this, if we move over back to the cancer research side, does a lot of the developments in this area have to do with the speed at which they're mapping the human genome?
Not so much. The genome was first mapped in the 1990s, and that provided a huge boost just to what we call basic research. Right. So this is based on an area that's more considered immunology, and there is a small element of genomics related to it, but it's really kind of separate. There's actually another method of treating cancer, what we call precision medicine, where you design a drug specifically to go after a genetic defect, but that's a little bit different than immunotherapy. But nonetheless, it's another exciting thing that's going on right now in oncology.
We're seeing technology firms getting involved in a lot of investing areas. In fact, on my Stacking Benjamin show, I was talking to a woman, Alina Lucas, who is a Silicon Valley person who's working on the grid. Are we seeing technology companies also getting more involved in this area of biotech?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that. There's actually a big story in Bloomberg today about Google Ventures and how much they're focusing on healthcare right now. They're starting a whole division within Google that's trying to develop drugs that have to do with aging and other mental illness problems. I think what's going on is, you mentioned the genome earlier. Well, the human body is being measured much more precisely now. We're using the diagnostics, and people have are walking around with wearables and Fitbits and things. But even in more medicine, just the imaging and the way you can detect cancer and the way you can quantify how things are changing your body is so different right now. And those companies in Silicon Valley are the experts at using data, and so there's just a much bigger data component to healthcare than there had been in previous years. And so the lines of technology and biotech are starting to blur a little bit. And I think that's really neat. And I think that's a trend that you'll see continue on. There's a lot of cool stuff. Google even has like a contact lens that they're developing with Novartis that measures the glucose in your body. And just there's so many neat things like that that Silicon Valley is involved with in our sector.
That's so exciting. I could talk about this stuff all day. I just love the advancements in technology. It's fascinating. Yeah. Let's talk, though, instead about the lung cancer immunotherapy ETF specifically, because this is a couple things that maybe some of our newer investor listeners don't know what these mean. The first thing is that the portfolio is equal weighted. What does that mean, Brad?
That's right. There's two primary ways to weight an index. Some of them are what's called market cap weighting, which essentially means the big companies will have a higher weighting than the small ones. And I didn't want to do that because when you do it that way, your portfolio is dominated by a large and in some cases lower growth companies. And I'll give you a perfect example. The most popular biotech index is called the NASDAQ Biotech Index, and there's an ETF that follows with the symbol IBB, and that's one of those market cap weighted. And the top five holdings in that index make up 40% of the total weight.
Wow.
And then the bottom 185 holdings make up the remaining 60%. And so it's just dominated by a handful of holdings. So in our case, if a small company moves, we wanted that to be able to move the portfolio itself just as much as if a big one does. So we do what's called equal weighting, which means in our case, we do this semi-annually. So every 6 months, this most recently happened in December, all 30 of our companies are given the same weight. So in this case, since we have 30, it's 3.33%. And then over that 6 month period, as some go up and some go down, the weightings will increase and decrease. And then when that 6 months has elapsed, we'll reset them all back to that equal weighting. And that's important because, especially in this case, both small and large companies are going to make contributions to cancer, to the field of cancer immunotherapy. And we wanted the small ones to have just as big of an impact on the the index as the big ones, because they'll have just as much as a contribution.
How do names get added and dropped from the index that it's your index that it follows?
Sure. We do that at the same six-month mark. So what we do at that six-month mark is we have a committee that reviews all of the companies that are in the index, so all 30, and then we look at the pool of companies that are focused on cancer immunotherapy and are not in the index. And essentially, the way that we've done this is we choose the 30 largest. And the reason we do that is because we want the 30, you know, what we consider the best, and we're letting the market determine that. This is not us picking our favorite stocks. And we think by virtue of the fact that the market makes those 30 companies the largest 30 companies by size in immunotherapy, that, you know, we kind of view that as the market saying that's the 30 most credible. And so we do that process every 6 months, and it's a little more nuanced than that. You know, we have to look at the company's pipelines and what they're working on and, you know, how credible they are in the field and make sure they truly have a strategic focus on this specific area of cancer immunotherapy.
The ticker symbol is CNCR. Where can people find out more, Brad?
I would recommend that people check out my index website, which is loncarindex.com. And that will show you who all the companies are. You can click on a link for them, and it'll send you to the company's webpage that describes their specific immunotherapy approach. And I have some more information on my website that talks about what they're working on. Because, you know, another thing that's important, I talked earlier about how important it is to be diversified and not pick winners. So immunotherapy is not one thing either. There's like a dozen different approaches to immunotherapy itself. There's what we call cancer vaccines. There's checkpoint inhibitors. There's all kinds of different things that make up immunotherapy. And we don't know what the winners in terms of technology are going to be either. And so this basket not only represents a diversified set of 30 companies, but it also represents a diversified set of approaches to immunotherapy. So if you go to that website, you can learn a little bit more about some of those approaches.
That's fantastic. And for people out on their morning walk, run, or bike ride, we'll have links on our show notes at moneytreepodcast.com. Thanks for hanging out with us today, Brad.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me, and I hope to get a chance to check in again with you sometime in the future.
Well, and I know, last thing, I know you're in Kansas City, and I love your Royals, so go Royals, except for when they're playing the Detroit Tigers.
Okay, that sounds all right. Yeah, it's been exciting. I'll tell you what, the team has really lifted up the city over the last few years, so it's been a lot of fun to watch them.
It is. It's fun to watch from afar, from another guy whose team has definitely lifted up a city, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Thank you.
And we're on to the second half of this amazing show, and let's introduce our crack panel. Starting in Idaho, the beautiful state of Idaho, it's Miranda Marquit from Planting Money Seeds.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thanks. It's finally warming up here. It's so very exciting.
I think it's warming up everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, we might see 40 by the end of this week. It's very exciting.
So let's transition, though, to the member of our roundtable who I think just met the president. She's in Palm Springs, where the president just was. Linda P. Jones, were you in with the president?
I wasn't in with the president and the whole Asian meeting, but I do live two blocks away. So my roads were blocked off, and it was a little bit challenging to get past the motorcade sometimes.
So
it was interesting.
Is that just frustrating or an honor?
A little bit of both, I think. We kind of, you know, give it leeway, give it some extra time. We know it's going to take us longer to get around town, and we see the police directing traffic and the roads blocked off and the cameras out and, you know, all kinds of things. But it's kind of fun to have Air Force One parked over at the airport. People go over there and take a look, and they know traffic's a little bad, but they know why. So everyone kind of gives a bit.
And you know what, Linda? We also have on today's show a guy who gets a police escort every time he leaves the house. It's from Rich as a King, Doug Goldstein.
That's right. Actually, if you guys could hurry up, because I have to call Air Force One to pick me up. I've got about 20 minutes now.
Well, that's good, because that's about the time this is going to take. We're talking sector investing. And it's interesting. I don't want to talk about just the sector that Brad talked about. Let's talk about sector investing in general. Linda, what do you think about investing, picking a sector and going deep like Brad has?
Well, I think obviously it can add some risk to a portfolio, but it also can add some return. And there are times when you might want to have a little bit of money in a sector, such as maybe natural resources now seem to be really oversold. Things like oil and metals and miners. We've had copper up 10% this last month. Miners are up 38% year to date. I mean, there's some really spectacular returns. Maybe it's just a dead cat bounce, or maybe it's the beginning of a new bull market for these resource companies, but maybe a small percentage of a portfolio could be put there.
That's a question that I have, Doug, is, you know, Linda talks about it adds more risk, but if you're doing, you know, more research and you've concentrated that research so that you really intimately know a sector, doesn't that mitigate some of the risk, Doug, that Linda's talking about?
Well, when you said sector, I actually thought the whole show was on Schechter, you know, the famous money manager, Abraham Schechter. So I'm not prepared to answer.
Whole different
not
show.
Just kidding.
Yeah, right. Ambiguity.
That was not. The principle sounds great. Of course, we want to be diversified and spread our money around. But one of the things actually that Brad had said, which really kind of cued me into the risk of that, is when you go into a sector fund, you might think you're getting a certain thing, but really it's Brad and his buddies once every 6 months deciding which stocks they want. I know he said they only choose the biggest ones, but then he said they have a more nuanced approach. So it's not necessarily clear that you're getting a specific sector that's as broadly diversified as you want, as much as you're getting a fund that was decided by, you know, some money managers. Not that I'm against money managers. I just want to be clear what you're buying.
So you're saying that in Brad's case, even though it's an exchange traded fund, really, in a lot of ways, you still are getting a manager.
Well, not managed the same way that you think you are actively managed, but it is not like you're buying the S&P 500, which is just, you know, 500 stocks. There's a lot more going on at the back end, which is not necessarily bad. I just think that a lot of people may not even realize that when they get into it.
But back to that question, can education in an area mitigate the risk of having a single sector like Linda's talking about? If you educate yourself more on those single stocks and you go deeper, does that get rid of some of the risk? Does it become less risky because you know it better?
You mean, and then buy the individual stocks or still go ahead and buy the index?
Either one.
Well, it doesn't necessarily eliminate the risk, but it makes you certainly have a better understanding about what you're getting involved in.
Miranda, what about sectors and education from your point of view? You think if somebody spends a lot of time looking at one area, that makes it less risky?
Well, I don't know that it makes it less risky, but I tend to agree with Doug that it tends to make you understand it more, which means you can make more informed choices about what you're going to do next. One of the interesting things about sector investing is it actually can go really well with trends and cycles, right? Because you can take a look at what different sectors are likely to do. You can follow their cycles. You can follow some trends that might be happening. And so you can kind of diversify within these larger trends if you want using sectors, because you can kind of follow that a little bit and get access to a lot of different funds. But once again, you do need to understand what you're doing, understand the risk, and be prepared to make those informed decisions. And from that standpoint, I think it can help, because as you're researching, then you'll gain a better understanding of what's going on.
Sticking with this idea of risk, Linda, it's funny. It seems like there was a period when I first started looking at individual stocks. I would look at a stock and then I would have this feeling that because I was looking at that stock, that stock was then going to do something. You know what I mean? Because my beacon was looking at that stock, that it was the best thing. And as I was talking to Brad, I thought about that. I mean, he's so excited about this clearly transforming area of the market, right? But to individual investors out there, what do they have to watch out for? They have to watch out for the thing that I'm talking about where, you know, just because you're looking at it doesn't make it sexier.
Well, I think you have to be careful with that, because that is a human nature trait that we think if we're focused on it, that for some reason it has some magic quality that it's about to go up, which is, of course, nonsense. I think that this is a little different from my normal investment type philosophy, because normally what I'm looking at is companies with consistent earnings and earnings that are increasing at an increasing rate. So I'm very specific to look for companies that make money. And of course, in the biotech space, you don't always have companies that make money, particularly the smaller ones. But yet, you know, for the last 5-6 years, we've had this tremendous boom in biotech where terrific profits have been made. And I think what Brad was smart to do was to add some of the large pharma companies that we know, like Bristol Myers, Merck, Amgen, Celgene, AstraZeneca, Pfizer. That makes up about 30% of that portfolio. So while I'm not recommending it or not recommending it, I think a basket is the best way to invest in a riskier asset class. And I think that some of those aren't earning money yet. So that makes it more risky. But then you have this 30% that are that have some really secure cash flow and earnings. So, you know, it's a really interesting asset class. I wanted to share with you something that might surprise you. This is a quote by Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle. He said, "What's going on is the end of Silicon Valley as we know it. The next big thing ain't computers, it's biotechnology." And he said that in 2003 to the Wall Street Journal. So obviously there is, you know, another boom underway in biotech, and whether it's in this, you know, immunotherapy for cancer or not, I don't know, but it is an interesting concept to think about and something for a small portion of an investor's portfolio to maybe take a little bit of extra risk if you want to have some combination again of established players and maybe something that could be the next big invention. Who knows?
When you say small percentage, what do you mean by that? About what percentage are you talking about?
I think 5% or less could be something added to a portfolio that's just a sort of a high-flying sector, which I would kind of consider this more of that. So I would say 5% or less.
Doug, do you do sector investing with your clients, or do you let the managers do that, the fund managers that you hire?
Oh, Joe, you're right on. You know that mostly I like to use managers and to handle the day-to-day operations. But I'll tell you, something Linda was just saying kind of inspired me and is making me perhaps even change the way I've thought about this, which is, you know, a lot of people talk about Israel as the startup nation. And we've got tons of biotech companies here. But the fact is, if you have a new biotech idea and you want to get listed, you get a lawyer, you pay a couple of dollars, and you get listed on the exchange, so all of a sudden you look famous. So people on the outside who say, I want to own a piece of the biotech industry, and I know that Israel's hot in that industry, let me buy an Israel ETF and I'm going to own it. You know, little do they know, Teva Pharmaceuticals, which is a $50 billion company, is Israel's biggest company, represents like a quarter of the index. So I'm going to step back from what I normally say, which is diversify and buy index funds or have money managers do it. If you want to get into this field, maybe what you really should do is begin to investigate individual stocks, get to know them very well, and sure, put a small percentage of your portfolio in it, but go for the individual stock instead of just diversifying, because it looks to me like these ETFs are not giving you the same bang for your buck.
Because I have to take the total opposite side of that. I do.
I like this.
I do. I think if you're going to invest in some really small companies that don't have earnings, you don't want to be doing that on an individual stock basis. I think this index would be the right way to go for that.
Well, unless, I mean, what if once again, you become intimately familiar with the company, Linda, you know, where you really get to know the pulse of what that company's all about?
Well, that's fine to be intimately knowledgeable with a company, but really what drives a stock price up is increasing earnings and increasing earnings at an increasing rate. It's really about profitability and money. And yes, you can get high-flying times like we did in 2000, where companies that had zero earnings became high flyers and highly valued companies without, you know, but we also had the dot-coms that had no earnings and were high flyers, and they usually end up in the same way. So until you have a company that can move into a space and start to generate cash flow and profits, I think it's a risk. And the best way to mitigate that risk is exactly what Brad has done, is to put it in an index with some established companies already. I think that's a fabulous format to invest in higher risk companies.
Well, I think one of the things that struck me as Doug was talking about how this one company made up like 25% of the index. It's not so much about, hey, I'm going to invest in this individual stock, but it's looking at it and saying, well, how much of this index, how much of this fund is one company responsible? What is the weight here? And is this going to have a big impact overall on the fund if something goes wrong? So understanding the makeup of the fund and looking into it and saying, okay, well, what's the weight here? How much of it is taking up, and how much is at risk if something goes horribly wrong with this one company?
A lot of risk. Listen, can I take the other side? Linda, I'm just,
sure.
You and I, we're not on the same page today.
Okay. That's cool.
I love it.
For big, for big companies, you know, look for cash flow, look for profits. I get it, right? Frankly, in my own company, that's what I focus on. But that's just not the way that most biotech goes. Most of the time, I can't quote a statistic, but it appears to me that these companies, they develop a good idea, they'll never have any earnings. They're just going to have a good patent, and they're going to sell it off to one of the big, you know, big pharma companies, or, you know, a much bigger company who they will ultimately convert it to cash flow and profits. But if you want to be in at the bottom floor, you got to take the risk there.
You're saying this particular sector isn't about rising earnings and rising profits?
Yeah, this is not, you know, utility companies or chip makers. This is, you know, like a wing and a prayer kind of stuff.
No, I totally agree. But that's why I think it belongs in an index. That's why I think put them together and buy them in an index, because there are a bunch of companies that don't have earnings. If you're going to invest into companies that don't have earnings, then you need to be diversified and put them with companies that do have earnings, which is what he did to create this index. And I think that was the right way to create the index. But I'm saying, if you're going to look at individual stocks, I wouldn't be buying one particular stock that has no earnings, because that's, you know, that's akin to just putting money on a roulette wheel.
Just to clarify, do you mean an index or a mutual fund where there's actually a manager looking at the stocks?
No, I'm just saying a basket. I'm just saying a diversified basket of these kinds of stocks would be, in my opinion, a less risky way to invest in them, rather than trying to pick the one that you think is going to be the winner. Because as Brad said, even though he spent years and years and years studying these companies, it's very hard to pick the one that's going to be the winner. So that's why he put together the index, which I think makes great sense.
Yeah, and I think you're both actually saying the same thing, just opposite sides of the coin. Linda, you're saying it's less risky. And Doug, you're saying if you're going to do it, pick one and win the lottery. Yes? No?
Pick one and understand. You may really, certainly may lose lose it all. But obviously, you know, this is only for money that you can afford to lose.
Sure. I have another question that's related to this discussion that we're having now, which is, when it comes to sector investing, you know, we've been talking a lot about biotech, but this is not just a biotech fund, right? This is a cancer immunotherapy fund. So how granular with our sector funds do we need to go? Should we be going as granular as Brad has here, where we think that, you know, the excitement's not in biotech, the excitement is in cancer immunotherapy, or do we go broader into just the biotech fund? Miranda?
Oh, you know, I'm all about the broadness for me. So if I'm going to look into a sector and sector investing, I'm going to look for something that's a little bit broader, that has a little bit, has a lot more diversity in it overall. I mean, I would probably, instead of just drilling down to biotech, is just do a healthcare thing overall or something like that.
You would even go that granular.
I don't know that healthcare is that granular.
No, that's what I'm saying. Not even go as granular as biotech.
You know? Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, biotech actually sounds kind of interesting and fun now that we're talking about it, but I would definitely go way broader than drilling down that deep. But that just goes back to my philosophy on getting the broadest swath of the market you can to just sort of ride that into the future.
But Linda, if it's only 5% of your portfolio, would you stay broad the way that Miranda's talking about, or would you get as granular as possible like Brad's doing?
That's a good question. I don't think there's any right answer to that. I think it's just preference. But the biotech industry is so fascinating because of the whole decoding of the human genome. And I think that there's going to be a lot of new methods and products and drugs and different things, therapies that are going to be introduced that are, you know, part of the latest boom. Which is probably why Larry Ellison said that quote. But which way to do it? You know, is it cancer? Sometimes maybe that's a personal decision for people. If they've been touched in their family by cancer, maybe they want to be emotionally attached to that. Maybe it's just people think it's a great opportunity. For me, I probably would be with Miranda, more of a broad biotech.
Yeah, Doug, I'm calling on you last, because as the guy that said, go with the individual stock, I'm guessing your answer will be more granular.
So the fact is, for my own money, I wouldn't waste my time. I would give it all to a money manager and let them diversify. Yeah. I think this is picking stocks and going granular is meant for people who just really dig investigating stuff on the market and going and visiting companies and reading all the, but that's not normal people. Normal people just want to invest for the long term. And so I would retreat back. And for myself, I think and my guess is for all of us, the proof is in the pudding. I don't think, you know, any of us are buying individual biotech or cancer immunotherapy stocks on our own. I spoke to a fellow named Rex Sinkfeld on my radio show Goldstein on Gelt. He was one of the founders of the whole ETF movement in the banks, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And I said, so what would you do? He said, I would buy the biggest, broadest world index you can possibly buy and just sit on it.
That's exactly the opposite of what we're talking about right now. Yeah, Miranda's high-fiving herself right now. Virtually high-fiving Doug.
That's right.
Let's talk about this, though. You talk about, you know, none of us are investing in cancer immunotherapy companies right now. What kind of granular stuff interests you? Are there any sectors right now that interest you, Miranda? Any sector out there that's like calling you away from the S&P 500?
Well, I think I kind of touched on it earlier when I said healthcare. I think just the healthcare sector is in general has a lot of potential, especially as we've got the baby boomers aging and the way everything's going with that. I really think the healthcare sector is something that has staying power for at least another 20 to 30 years. That's a sector that I, you know, look into. And if it included some kind of forward-thinking biotech stocks, sure. But just healthcare in general, kind of broad, is something that is going to be needed for a long time.
Doug, anything you find exciting right now?
Well, you know, I'm not in that space. I would just look, I leave it to the money managers. So I do see that they are moving from sector to sector, but they could literally switch, you know, from day to day. So I think that people who are trying to guess which sector is going to, you know, score because it's a presidential election year or because whatever's going on, that's not the way I would pick my investments.
Yeah. Linda, anything that you're finding attractive right now?
Just to kind of mirror what I said at the beginning about natural resources, you know, that's a sector that we used to include a long time ago, and then that cycle went out of favor. And I think we're probably entering into a time where it's going to be back in favor over a longer term period. So I think people will eventually be adding a piece of that back into the portfolio. So why not do it early?
I invested that little bit that we're talking about, the kind of bet part of my portfolio, in a silver ETF maybe 3 weeks ago. And holy cow, it's been amazing.
I mean, for the miners to be up 38% year to date, they're the leading sector this year. So it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah,
I need to, now that gold is finally, you know, having a bit of a resurgence and I've got my little fund money that I put in there ages ago, I probably need to revisit that and get it out now.
Precious.
just now that it's gaining.
Precious metals still just scare the hell out of me because it's just so much volatility and so little long-term gain. I mean, I look back to charts that go, you know, back to like 1985, and I think where's the beef? Just frustrating. You got to be there at specifically the right time. I like that though. Right now, I also like alternative energy. I think is fun.
And once again,
I'm just talking about fun, right? But solar, wind power, I think those are, there's a lot going on in those sectors right now. That
don't you think that the money is going to leave those sectors now? Because why bother when oil is so cheap?
You know, it's amazing. I would have said that until I started digging into those sectors, because that was specifically my thought. But once solar became interesting to Silicon Valley, now the things that are going on in the energy markets in general is there's just some amazing innovation going on there that I think that it is less to do now with the price of oil than it's ever had before. So we'll see.
And the hedge funds are in that space in a big way. There's a lot of money that's being allocated to green energy. It's big.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I didn't, and I just have to say this out loud. That has nothing to do with our sponsor. That has zero to do with our sponsor. I don't want people to go, well, maybe that Wonder thing's fantastic because of that. No. That has nothing to do with that. And still very aggressive, right? And still stuff you should only do with play money. So there we go. Sorry. Like having a sponsor, but just needed to say that out loud. All right, let's talk about what's going on at each of your homes. Doug, we introduced you last. Well, if you go first, what's going on at Goldstein on Gelt?
Well, at Goldstein on Gelt, we actually just booked another Nobel Prize winner to be on the show, Harry Markowitz, who is the founder, who won the Nobel Prize in economics for modern portfolio theory. So I always like talking to Nobel Prize winners because I like to give them ideas.
Of course.
No, I'm kidding. But I'm very excited because this is actually what a huge amount of the business that I do in my day job as a financial advisor is based on. And I'll get to speak to the guy who won the prize for it.
Modern Portfolio Theory. Never heard of it.
You're a little too old, Joe. That's all.
That's right. That's fantastic. Linda, what's happening at your home?
Well, first I want to say to Doug that Harry is one of my heroes, believe it or not. So I am definitely turning into your episode, and I'm so excited that you have him as a guest. Congratulations and kudos to you for that.
Thanks. I'll tell him Linda sends her love. He's 88 years old, by the way.
Yeah, he's got to be. Yeah.
But let's talk about Be Wealthy and Smart. What's going on there?
Wealthy and Smart, we have our VIP experience that we go over what's going on in the markets every month. So we still are, we still have our active membership in that and working on some new things that I'm not ready to announce yet, but some exciting things coming up.
And there's a guy working on your lawn right outside.
Yes.
And Miranda, how about it planting money seeds, adulting, wherever you want to talk about?
Well, actually, one of the things that I thought was more interesting was our one on adulting.tv. We just put out a thing on how to divorce like an adult, and to do it as cheaply as possible. You know, if you're looking for that kind of information and how to save money, you can read my story on how we divorced without spending a lot of money because we acted like grownups.
That's awesome. And we'll link to all of your stuff at our show notes at MoneyTree. What is it? Oh my God. MoneyTreePodcast.com.
MoneyTreePodcast.com.
And Miranda, are you going to take us out?
No one will take care of your money as well as you do. So remember to invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at MoneyTreePodcast.com for more free investing resources.